It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And, Fred, we had a whole list of stuff, and we're still going to get to most of it. But just within the last couple of hours, we have a new top topic to address, so let's get right to it. Julio Urias is it's actually kind of a rare pitching prospect in that everybody's crazy about his ability, and he's a guy that they've been talking about for a long time, and he's got the performance to match it. Because sometimes you'll see these guys, you know, Taijuan Walker is an example. To some extent this year, Lucas Giolito is an example of guys who are really touted, and people think they're going to be great. The numbers aren't always there in the minors. With the exception of, I think, one start in his AAA debut last year, the numbers are there for Urias. The scouting is there. This guy is, across the board, considered one of the best there is. And he's going to start on Friday night in Queens. How excited should we be?
Yeah, well, I mean, we would be really, really excited if we knew that this was a permanent rotation spot, right. But we don't know that. I would say in any league, I would be happy to pick him up right now. And I put him right into my lineup for that start and then just kind of figure out the rest later. We just don't know exactly what the Dodgers have planned for him.
And that's the thing, and they've got Alex Wood. It's hard to read the Alex Wood situation because triceps is one of those scary things, because whenever you hear triceps, you immediately, or at least I immediately, wonder, does that actually mean elbow? Not that the team's hiding or lying, but a lot of times triceps soreness, it seems, becomes elbow ligament issue, or is determined to be, it's probably the best way to put that, an elbow ligament issue. So that's definitely a worry, and yet the Dodgers seem basically unconcerned. They say, oh no, Alex Wood's going to start Monday against the Cubs. So they've got guys coming back. They've got guys progressing nicely, as the Cardinals starters used to say in the days when I covered them, progressing nicely towards a return. So it's not entirely clear how much of a rotation opportunity there is for Urias. But you know, one of the things we've talked about, I think it's a little less true for a starting pitcher, but if guys play well enough, they tend to force themselves into opportunities. We were concerned what kind of opportunity there would be for Nomar Mazara. We were concerned what kind of opportunity there would be for Trevor Story. You perform, you're probably going to play. That's a little different for a starter who at 19 are trying to manage his innings, but is your point here, who cares, just get what you can now?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the Dodgers, you know, they're 4.5 games back right now of the Giants, and, you know, they envision themselves as a team that can win the division, and if he can give them a spark for a while. I mean, they are a team that has pitchers coming back in the second half, McCarthy, Ryu. So, I mean, their rotation is probably thinnest now in comparison to what it will be down the stretch. So, you know, maybe they just want to get some starts and innings out of him right now and then, you know, put him in the bullpen later on. I think as a fantasy owner, you know, to pick him up, you're going to drop the worst player on your team. There's a good chance that if in a couple weeks, you know, he's not in the rotation and you want to drop him again, that the player you dropped is going to either still be there or someone pretty much like him is going to still be there and you can pick him up. So, you know, who you drop depends on your league size. I think it would be interesting if an owner was going to drop a stash pick. So, like, for example, if you had Blake Snell stashed right now, would you drop Snell to pick him up?
I think so, just because at worst, you hold on to Urias. Like, right, if you're holding Snell for the opportunity, for the hope that he's going to pitch at some point, you pick up Urias, and then he's out of the rotation, well, then you're holding Urias instead of holding Snell. I'm fine with that. I mean, this guy, I think the downside, if he gets out of the rotation in that kind of comparison, is you're now holding a better prospect and a guy we know is on the radar. So, I'd be totally fine with that.
Yeah, my concern would be that in a few weeks that the Dodgers have decided, you know, from an innings perspective, to just put him in the bullpen for a while, and then Snell comes up and the Rays say, you know, he's in our rotation, he's in the rotation for the rest of the year. That would just be my only concern, is that you just never get a settled rotation spot with Urias, and then with Snell at some point you do. I think that's a tough call. If you're just looking at dropping, like, just your worst veteran pitcher, and that, like I said, who that is depends on your league size, but everybody's got one. If you're just dropping that worst veteran pitcher, then I think that's fine.
Unfortunately, my worst veteran pitcher is a guy I just traded the closer for, so but we won't talk about that now. But at the opposite end, a former phenom, now a guy who we hoped would be an ace coming into the year, maybe doing that. Are we confident that David Price is fixed?
I think so. I feel pretty confident. And this has been a year where aces have been really frustrating. And I'm not saying he's the safest one right now, but I think I'm pretty comfortable with him. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I do. I do. Again, with the same caveats built in that even if he's fixed, he is still pitching in the tougher league in a division where there are almost no breaks. So, you know, you still ding him. If you're talking trades with David Price, I think going forward, you still ding him a little bit for circumstances, for Fenway, for AL East, for DH, all that kind of thing, relative to some of the other guys you might be talking about. If you're talking about a Strasburg, for example, I think you ding Price a little for his circumstances. But, yeah, you know, he's never stopped striking guys out, and I think that was a really encouraging thing. We talked about that, and it seems to me that whatever was going on has been sorted out.
Yeah, and I mean, I was thinking a little bit about the AL East the other day, and, you know, if you're a Red Sox pitcher, you're backed by what is right now the best lineup in baseball.
Yep.
And the Yankees lineup, not scary. The Rays lineup, to me, not scary. And the Blue Jays lineup this year has not been scary. They've struck out a lot and are kind of middle of the pack in the league in runs. So, you know, like, I know it's not an easy division to pitch in, but it may not be, if you're on the Red Sox, it may not be as hard because you don't have to face your own lineup.
No, it's an excellent point. A guy who's been looking really good lately, I'm almost about to jump back on, especially when you look at how he finished last season. Julio Teheran came on really strong at the end of last year and is pitching very, very well, and pretty much all of those numbers are nice. He's at about a strikeout an inning. The walks are pretty low, certainly a lower rate than last year, looking like back when Teheran was one of the better starters around. I probably wouldn't go all the way to ace, but do you agree with me that at this point, Tehran's probably a solid two?
I think ratios-wise, you know, he's a two or a three, depending on your league size. It's just the concern with wins, with him pitching for the Braves. And, you know, what if he pitches well all year and gets nine wins? And,
that's
I know some years certain pitchers, Corey Kluber last year, for example, just get unlucky. But with him, it would be kind of unlucky and kind of something that we can see coming with that lineup supporting him and the bullpen, you know, that picks up for him. So from that perspective, I think it bumps him down maybe to three or four starter, depending on your league size. But, yeah, ratios-wise, he's a good pitcher to target probably for owners who are doing fine in wins but need some help with the ratios.
That makes sense. It's nice to see him back. He was a guy, it was frustrating to him. It was frustrating to the Braves. And it looks like, you know, again, we've got this year so far, and we've got the numbers he posted in September last year. And really, even in July and August, he was showing signs last year. There were very encouraging signs down the stretch. So it's good to think that he is a guy to be encouraged about. And look, the other thing is, and I don't think this is likely, but you wouldn't entirely rule out Julio Teheran getting traded before the deadline. You wouldn't be shocked if the Braves decided to cash in on a guy who could be considered a really compelling asset in what might be a pretty slim trade market. You look at what this coming free agent market is, by some accounts, the worst anybody can remember. Well, that certainly means that maybe these guys, there's not a lot to be traded for. Teheran goes in there, he might be the best pitcher on the market.
Yeah, actually, I was about to bring that up, you know, and then I'm glad you brought it up because that could have a major impact for him. You know, I mean, the Braves will certainly be sellers. And, you know, if he could get them, say, a really, really good young pitcher in return in a trade, I mean, he's someone they can keep around for the rebuild. Like, he's young enough that he can kind of be their staff anchor when they expect to be competitive again. But at the same time, I'd have to think that they would at least listen if a contending team was offering them a really good young pitcher, a really good young position player for him. And then, yeah, that could put him, you know, in a situation where he can get more wins.
A guy we talked about before we started recording, a guy we talk about every week because you're frustrated with him, and I understand. Yeah. Where are you at with Dallas Keuchel right now?
Yeah, I'm feeling I sold low, a little low on him in the Tout Wars League a couple weeks ago, and I feel good about that, and I'm thinking about in the Labor League selling him really low on him. I'm just not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel right now because I'm not picking up, like, one thing that if he fixed. I remember when we were talking about Price a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that I couldn't actually find, like, anything really wrong. He was just giving up a lot of runs. Like, the The hit rate was okay. He was giving a few more hits, but the walk rate was fine. The home run rate was fine. The strikeout rate was fine. With Keuchel, it just is kind of all looking bad. And I'm not even seeing starts where, you know, he's really thriving. Like last year, say, for example, when he was great at home. And he's had home starts recently, and he hasn't been especially good in them. I'm just not seeing something that makes me feel like he's going to turn it really around right now. And the one thing I've always said is that like a really bad pitcher in your lineup hurts you more than a bad hitter. You can kind of get past a hitter who just does nothing for a week, but a bad pitcher just kills your ratios.
As I am learning with the recently acquired Michael Wacha, but, you know, a guy that I think there is reason to be hopeful for, and look, the most talked about player in baseball, probably at this point, to everyone's exhaustion. But when you look at Matt Harvey and you look at how he begins these starts and you look at how good he is for three or four innings, I find that very encouraging. That means I am not – it means I might bench him for a start or two. It means I might not give him – I might not start him against the White Sox. I might give that a rest. But I would be encouraged because you got to think at some point either the stamina will come, they'll give him a DL stint, and he'll get rested. I'm encouraged by how good he is showing he can be within nearly every start.
Right. So to you, he's a big buy low right now.
If I had the opportunity, I would. I'm not searching for him, but if somebody had him and was fed up, yes, I would be very intrigued by that. Now, look, I might pick him up. I might trade for him and bench him for a while. You know, I might be willing to do that where I believe enough in the ability and the encouraging signs are encouraging enough that I might be willing, if somebody really just wanted to get out of that, I might be willing to pick him up and not start him for a little while because you can see the flashes and you can see if he gets right just how good he could be in a few weeks, a month.
Yeah, and I think if someone is looking to buy low on him, the really interesting trades that I feel like at this time of year, you could trade or you could offer someone who's pitching really well but just doesn't have, you know, his name value and his long-term success. Would you trade Drew Pomeranz for him?
I would, yes.
Yeah, and I feel like his owner would probably have to look really seriously at that just to get someone who's, you know, pitching really well right now. And you may be able to even go a little bit lower than that, like if he's just really hurting someone's ratios. And it might depend on how much that other owner has wiggle room to bench him or whether that other owner feels like, well, I need starters right now. It's either him or someone who I trade for. So, yeah, for me, I wouldn't buy low on Keuchel, but I can see the rationale with Harvey.
Yeah. And speaking of guys pitching really well right now that you're not sure if you believe in, how high do you have Rich Hill ranked right now?
Yeah, to me, he's, like, the way he's pitching, he's a number two. Like, the strikeout rate's so high, he's probably a mixed league number two or number three. Twos and threes kind of blend, I think, together once you're past those few aces. With him, I guess it's just the concern about will he be able to maintain this workload, you know, across 30 starts and stay healthy all season. For that reason, I probably have to bump him down, like, say, outside my top 25 pitchers or something like that. But I feel like he has to be in play after that. Do you think?
Yeah, I think the main thing with Hill is I've seen enough. I've seen him do enough. I've seen how he's doing it. I've read some analysis of him, and I'm willing to believe that this is not a fluke. This may be the top end, but I don't think he's going to come crashing down. He may correct some, but I don't think Hill's a guy that in 2 months you're going to say, what in the world did he do in April and May, and why is he so bad again?
No, I think the concern with him is you know, the age and the lack of, you know, track record at this workload.
Yep.
In the majors, and then him just coming down with an injury by July and something like that. That's my concern with him. And why? So, for example, would you rather own Hill or Teran?
It's an interesting question, and I might side towards Teran just because of the thing you just mentioned. Because I'm really confident that he's going to make 32, 33 starts, and I'm really confident that he's going to be at least pretty good over 32, 33 starts. And it's not that I just finished saying I don't think Rich Hill is going to come crashing to earth, but I do like a guy with that kind of established history of just consistently taking the ball. And again, as we talked about, that possibility that maybe he's taking the ball for, I don't know, the Giants in 2 months. That's, boy, you put Julio Teherán on the Giants, and that's suddenly a really compelling guy to have.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're right. And you can say that Rich Hill's a risk without saying he's going to come crashing down. I mean,
yeah.
He may not come crashing down from a performance perspective, but the health is risky. And maybe they're different trade targets for different people. Maybe the owner who's really struggling in pitching and says, hey, I need to take a risk, and Rich Hill's going to be my risk. I'm going to pick him up. I'm going to hope that he stays healthy. I get 200-plus strikeouts. And, you know, I'm not doing well in pitching already. And if he gets hurt in July or August, then it just wasn't meant to be. And maybe Teron's a great trade target for the owner who says, well, I already have an ace. I already have a number two. I need to supplement. I need, you know, a reliable starter. So maybe they're just good trade targets for different types of situations.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that's something that we should probably touch on more is we are definitely getting to the point of the season where you know what you've got, you know what you need, and you know, in March, it's really mostly just a question of absolute value. Who's the best guy that I can get? We're getting to the point where you have some idea, and it's as much a question of who's the best guy for what I need, and those questions of value become a little more relative.
Would you trade Matt Harvey for Rich Hill?
I probably would. I know I just came down to the opposite sides of both those guys. I just came down a little bit high on Harvey, and a little bit low on Hill. But even so, I think I'd probably rather have the guy. I like I said, I think I believe in Hill's performance more than I do even, as you said, Pomeranz. But you know, maybe that was a specific guy. I'm still a little skeptical to believe him in a way that I'm not for Hill, and I can't really explain or justify that, honestly.
Yeah, and I mean, if, like, again, we get back into situations, someone who owns Harvey, there's a decent chance that they're struggling with the ratios because he's really hurt the ratios, and they were expecting him to really help the ratios, and Hill is the kind of guy who could give them a big boost where he gets, you know, the monster strikeout totals and solid ratios. You know, he's that, like, lottery ticket. You pick him up in a trade for Harvey. And, I mean, Harvey has a double-edged downside right now. There's the downside that at some point they put him on the disabled list, and there's the downside that he continues to pitch and just continues to struggle. Whereas with Hill, I think what we're saying is there's the one downside, and that's that he ends up at some point on the disabled list.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you know, with Pomeranz, that's just one of those guys where we talk about this sort of general class. In that class of guys who are doing it now who maybe haven't really done it before, he's one of the guys I'm more skeptical of.
Yeah, and there's a workload thing with Pomeranz, and I like him a lot, and I say I'm higher than most on him, but there is a workload thing with him and, you know, and some other pitchers, Aaron Sanchez of the Blue Jays, for example. You know, there's going to be workload issues with those pitchers in August and September, and once, if you try to trade them in August, everybody's going to be thinking about the workload issues because that's going to be a prominent story. If you want to trade them and get full value for them, you need to trade them now when that's not a story.
Yep. We move to hitters, and Bryce Harper is hitting .246. Now, we know that Harper is capable of hitting for a lot higher average. The power remains there. I think that we're starting to like what the Nationals are doing in front of him. I think, I like Jason Wirth in the two spots. So, you know, as far as some of the other stuff, he's stolen some bases. So as far as all that stuff, we're certainly not saying Harper is not an elite player. I'd still probably pick him as my National League MVP at the end of the year. But I'm not entirely convinced that last year wasn't the outlier on batting average for Harper. I don't know. And if he hits .340 the rest of the way, I won't be shocked at all. But it is tough to adjust. I think Dusty Baker, made a really good point the other day about how Barry Bonds handled this and how Bryce Harper handles it, and noted that when people completely stopped pitching to Barry Bonds, Barry Bonds was in his mid-30s. Bryce Harper is 23 and is a much tougher adjustment to keep your mind right, to keep your strike zone when nobody's giving you anything to hit, which is all a very long way of saying, are you adjusting what you thought about Harper relative to that couple of weeks at the beginning of the year when we said, oh, man, this guy that we saw last year, he's that good and maybe even better?
Yeah, I'm still pretty optimistic on him. I went and did a little looking on him, and his BABIP this year is .232, which is unsustainably low, especially for someone as talented as him. His career is .325. So just a correction with it should push his batting average up closer to .300. And I agree with you that maybe he's not the .330 hitter that he was last season. Now, then I don't like to just take a look at that one stat and just blindly accept it. So I did kind of look at the way he's putting balls into play. He's putting a lot more balls into the air this year, and his line drive rate really went up last season and has really gone down this season. So he's not really squaring up the ball, you know, as much as he did last year. Like last year, his BABIP was 369, and that kind of fits because he was hitting a lot of line drives last year. So I'm not expecting him to have that much, you know, success on balls in play, but I do think that that's going to correct at some point. So I think we're dealing, you know, like Baker said, like we're dealing with a young hitter who's frustrated, who's, you know, hitting a lot of balls in the air. He's not having a lot of success on them. He hit a lot of home runs early in the season. I think Harper actually in fantasy might be a buy low right now, because a lot of that those 11 homers he's hit so far this year came in April, and his owners may be willing to sell him at a bit of a discount.
Who would you rather have for the rest of the year to revisit the debate from December and March one more time, here to the end of 2016, Harper or Trout?
Yeah, for me it's still Harper, and for me the low batting average is actually offset by the fact that he has 7 steals. So if he steals 20 bases this season, even when we were talking about steals with these players back in February and March, you know, we were talking about hoping he would steal 15. Well, he might steal 20 or more this year, and that kind of has me excited. I think I would still rather have Harper, and I would take a chance that the batting average will come around. But I'm still kind of aware. Actually, in April, I was kind of feeling like, okay, definitely Harper. And now I'm kind of back to where I was in February or March, where I say I prefer Harper, but I have no qualms with someone who prefers Trout.
That seems reasonable to me. What are you expecting from Joey Gallo, both in terms of performance, but also how much he's going to get to play?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's going to play enough to really make an impact. I think I would pick him up, you know, going back to Arias at the beginning, and we're not sure about his role. I think I would probably pick Gallo up and kind of see what happens in a week, but he's only come up to bat once since they called him up a few days ago, and I don't know. I kind of feel like if you bring up a big prospect like Gallo and you want him to be a big part of your team going forward, I don't know. It just doesn't make it seem to me like you put him on the bench for the first couple of games and don't put him in the lineup at all. Do you think he's going to get a regular role?
I don't know, and I think it's worth noting. Well, it's hard to say when Nomar Mazara is just lighting the world on fire, but I think it's worth noting that the Rangers haven't always done the best job of turning great prospects into excellent Major League Baseball players. I don't even know that it's a failure on their part. I think maybe it happens, but it's just kind of hard to shake that there have been a lot of guys we've been really excited about. They haven't all turned it out. It's probably unfair. Odor as well. So there are certainly some successes, but you know, you think about an Andrews and you think about a Profar, and you just, I don't know, probably completely unfair, but it is something I have. It's something we talk about sometimes, organizations and trends. I just don't know. I like Gallo. I like the power, but I haven't seen what there is to convince me that he's going to be a guy that is going to be an impact player in the near term.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I mean, the upside with the power, if he was going to play every day, would be enough for me to sort of want to own him and then figure, like, see how he fares. But I don't know. It just, to me, like, one of your best prospects in the minors, maybe your best prospect in the minors, and you bring him up. And when he first came up, I was like, okay, they're going to use him. Prince Fielder hasn't played well this year. Mitch Moreland hasn't played well this year. You know, they have injuries in the outfield. They're going to find a way to just, even if it's multiple positions, but he's going to be in the lineup 4 times a week or something. And it's curious to me that he hasn't been in the starting lineup yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Jackie Bradley Jr. hit .281 with pretty good power and a few stolen bases in AAA. He's hitting .350 with some rather nice power, and no stolen bases in the major leagues. Oh, by the way, he's also hitting 29 straight games. How high are you on Bradley? And I think maybe the bigger question is what kind of player, what shape of performance you think we're going to see from Bradley at the end of 2016?
Yeah, I mean, he's been amazing. He's on waivers in most mixed leagues a little over a month ago, and he's been amazing. But I think he's the ultimate sell-high player right now. I mean, his BABIP this year is 403, which is almost 100 points over his career mark. And, I mean, you know, he could be, you know, putting the ball in play a little harder and some things like that, but his line drive rate's not really up. There's not a lot of changes there. I mean, I get that he's maybe gotten a little better, so he's not the .238 career hitter. Like, he's better than that now, but He's not a, to me, he's not a 350 hitter, and he's probably not even a 300 hitter. He's not a base stealer. I don't think he'll steal even 10 bases this year, 5 or 6, something like that. And he has some power, but like, he's maybe a 20 home run guy to me. And so 20 homers, 5 or 6 steals, solid batting average. Like, he's a solid outfielder, but I feel like he could get a lot more for that, you know, a lot more for him right now. Do you think that that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And when I, you know, think about Bradley, there's another Red Sox player with a 400 batting average on balls in play and a hitting streak in the making. But Xander Bogaerts hit 372 on balls in play last year. He hit 320 last year. He's at 349 this year. He's coming into some power. I apologize for a guy who wasn't on the list, but when I think Bradley, I think Bogaerts. And Bogaerts is having a heck of a year. And I think, you know, maybe the thing that jumps out most relative to last year, he's already got 6 stolen bases in less than a third of a season. How high do you have Bogaerts?
Yeah, really high. Like, I'm really impressed with Bogaerts. And, you know, to me, big differences between Bogaerts and Bradley. Bogaerts a shortstop. Like, that makes a huge difference in fantasy. And Bogaerts hits third in probably the best lineup in baseball. Like, that just the top of that batting order right now with Betts, Pedroia, Bogaerts, Ortiz, like, just killing pitchers. And, you know, Bradley is hitting, like, sixth now, and that's good. But Bogaerts in that lineup spot, like, there's just so much potential for him this season to, you know, maybe be around in the 15 to 20 range in homers and steals, really high batting average, and then be in the 80 to 110 or 90 to 100 range in RBIs and in runs. And, like, there just aren't shortstops doing that other than Correa, maybe.
Yeah, and it's funny because you look to them at the beginning of the year, and he seemed like one of those guys who might be a better baseball player than fantasy player. Just look at last year, the 320 is nice, but 7 homers, 10 steals, 81 RBI at a shortstop is really nice. I don't mean to suggest that he wasn't a guy you wanted, but when 7 homers turns into on pace for 15 to 17, when 10 steals turns into on pace for 17 to 20, that's a different look.
Yeah, for sure. And I think where he's gone is, you know, at the beginning of the season, everyone was debating, and us included, you know, who's the number two shortstop between him, Lindor, and Corey Seager? And then maybe some people threw Troy Tulowitzki into that discussion. Yeah. We didn't quite so much, but now he's cleared that. And now you can discuss him against Correa, and I would still, I think, rather own Correa, but I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to say with him hitting third in that lineup. I might prefer one of those other shortstop if they were hitting third for the Red Sox for the rest of the season, the way the Red Sox are going right now, but they aren't, and Bogaerts is. And, like, yeah, I would be willing to pay a lot for him on the trade market if I was a fantasy owner that really needed a shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the question is fantasy for the rest of this year, I think it's absolutely fair to ask, would you rather have Correa or Bogaerts? Just because, again, Bogaerts last year had a full season of being a really good big league hitter, and Correa had two-thirds of a season of being a really good big league hitter, but I'm a little more confident. It's a slightly longer track record. It's for this year, I think it's at least a fair question, and I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's at least worth asking, which you would not have thought before the year.
Yeah, I think you get a few, probably by the end of the year, you'll get a few more homers and a few more steals out of Correa, but you might get a batting average that's 50 points higher from Bogaerts and more runs and more RBIs.
Yeah. Miguel Cabrera is Miguel Cabrera again. He's 33. He's at the point, you know, one of the comparisons that got made a lot was him to Albert Pujols. He's now at the age where Albert Pujols was fully into his decline phase, and Miguel Cabrera is hitting 322 and well on his way to another 30 home run, 100 RBI season. He is having a year that looks right out of the middle of his career. How eager would you be to pick up Cabrera?
Yeah, I find I'm a little bit of the low man on Cabrera sometimes in fantasy circles, and I like him, and I get that he's, you know, likely a Hall of Fame player and everything, but and he's been hitting really well recently. But I'm just not sure if the power to me over a full season is locked in anymore, or if we're going to see it in spurts like how we've seen it this year, where he wasn't hitting for power and everyone's worried about him, and then he is again, and now everyone's happy. I mean, he wasn't on pace for 30 home runs last season, whether he, if he had played, if you just take his pace and, you know, put it over 155 games. And he didn't hit, he hit 25 in 2014, and he did play the full season. So to me, he's kind of like a high 20s, 30-ish home run guy. He drives in 100 runs, hits for a high average. Totally a really good hitter and a really good fantasy player, but I'm not sure if that gets him to me into that top 10 hitters group with the Machados and the Arenados anymore.
One more hitter and we'll move on. I touted over the winter Justin Upton as possibly the best of the significant free agent deals over the winter. He's been a really consistently good player for several years now, and he's just been bad. Two home runs. His walk rate has plummeted. He's striking out really even a little more than ever. There is virtually nothing to like, only one stolen base. There's virtually nothing to like in Justin Upton's profile this year. And yet I can't bring myself even to I certainly can't bring myself to drop him. I have a hard time even benching him. Tell me I need to at least bench him.
Yeah, I think you can bench him. I mean, when we talk about hitters who have been fortunate or unfortunate, he's actually been pretty fortunate on balls in play this year. And as you said, just the skills have just completely dropped off. He's not putting the ball in play. He's striking out more than he ever has. He's walking less than he ever has. He's swinging and missing more than he ever has. It's just everything's just been a mess. I don't know if this is league adjustment, if this is pressure of a new contract. I do know that within seasons, he does tend to be a streaky hitter who has these great stretches and then kind of disappears for a while. But even when he disappears, he's not usually as off as he is right now. So at his age too, like all I can chalk it up to is just new team, new league, you know, and just not feeling comfortable yet. I would never drop Justin Upton. I couldn't do it. And I've recommended people to drop Carlos Gomez. So I'm not someone who won't drop someone with a big name, but I just can't imagine dropping Upton. But if I was going to buy low on him, I think the discount would need to be fairly heavy because I think he has to go to your bench for now.
Yep. All right. Well, appreciate it.
if you wanted to sell low on him, I think you could, but you can't just give him away. Like, it's Justin Upton. It's someone who, when he's going good, is so valuable.
Yeah. It is baffling. He's one of the most baffling players.
Would you trade him for Jackie Bradley Jr.?
There you go. Yeah, I'll propose that one, see how that works out.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been a ludicrous trade, though, back in March. You'd say, I can't believe this guy's offering me Jackie Bradley Jr. for one of the best players on my team.
Yeah.
But I don't think any Bradley owners would take that right now.
No, absolutely not. We move to the injuries. Devin Travis is back a little sooner than the Blue Jays hoped. I am treading very lightly with him, both on opportunity and performance. I'm not sure they're going to play him every day to start with. I'm not sure what a guy with a shoulder that wrecked is going to look like. It is easy to get excited about him because he was a really exciting player, but I am treading very lightly. Do you like him more than I do in the short term?
Yeah, I'm going to say that I like him more than you. I'm worried a little bit about, you know, his long-term durability with the shoulder, but I do think maybe they manage his workload a little bit the first week or two, but I do feel like, and I follow the Blue Jays really closely, I feel like they are desperate for a spark right now. Like, this is a really, really frustrated team. You know, going back to, well, their offense has struggled this year, the fight in Texas, and then Donaldson getting ejected in Minnesota, and Gibbons has been ejected several times. Like, this just feels like a frustrated team. They've been striking out a lot. A lot of players are underperforming. They're just looking for a spark, and I know there's that feeling within them that maybe Travis is the guy to give their lineup a little more length and then kind of spark them, because I feel like they've really moved on with Ryan Goins. They've been playing Darwin Barney a lot before Travis came back, and I feel like that's just them giving up on Goins for now. So I think as soon as Travis shows he's ready, he's going to play a lot. Whether his shoulder holds up, like, that's a completely different story. I would pick him up if I needed middle infield help and cross my fingers on it. Even if I just could drop like a boring a Jed Lowry type or someone like that, like, I would pick up Travis and hope it works out, knowing that it may not.
Eduardo Rodriguez is a guy who I think the hype exceeded the numbers last year, but I bought. I think he's really exciting. I saw enough times when he was really, really good, and he was one of those guys who was good or bad. There's very little in between. There weren't a lot of three runs, six innings kind of starts from Rodriguez. It looks like he's back very soon, maybe one more AAA start, and maybe not. It wasn't an arm issue. It seemed like they were making progress toward fixing those blow-ups. Maybe it was an issue of tipping pitches. I'm really high on Rodriguez. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm fairly high on him. I may not be quite as high as you are, but I would pick him up in most leagues. And he's going to come back into a great situation. I mean, he's not in the NL or anything, but we already knew that. I mean, he's coming back to a team that's playing great and hitting so well. He's going to be well supported, and everything's kind of clicking for Boston right now. And I don't think fantasy owners should confuse the fact that it took him a long time to get back in comparison to what we expected.
Right.
That doesn't mean that when he does come back, he won't be really, really effective. I mean, if a guy takes an extra month to come back, it doesn't mean that when he comes back, he's not completely healthy. He should be completely healthy, and we should expect him to be effective. It's frustrating that it took him a little while longer, but that shouldn't take off the enthusiasm that a lot of fantasy owners had for him, you know, back in February and March.
And that leads to my one question. Would you start him right away? I definitely agree you pick him up anytime you have the chance. Would you start him right away, or would you make sure that there wasn't any rust for a start or two?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't start him in his first start. I'm typically a little wary of starting pitchers the first time they come back, especially when they've been gone for a long time. Like, you know, I'd start your Darvish right away, you know, like a pitcher of that caliber. But someone like Rodriguez has been out for a long time. I don't know if I would start him right away, but that being said, I might only need to see one good start before I put him in my lineup.
And that actually leads into another guy we need to ask about. How do you assess Darvish going forward?
I'm pretty excited about him. You know, I know he may not be 100% effective, but I think a lot of fantasy owners have forgotten how many strikeouts he was getting before he was injured. Like, I was looking it up in the offseason. I think aside from Kershaw's 300 strikeout season last year, he has the highest strikeout total in a single season in, like, the last decade from his last fully healthy season. So, I mean, and he was on pace to be right around that mark in, I guess it was 2014, when he first started dealing with injuries. I'm not saying he's going to be that, but he could be significantly below that and still be one of the best strikeout pitchers in baseball. So, you know, I'm pretty excited. Matthew, are you thinking of him as like a top 12 starter for the rest of the season?
I just don't know. I mean, to me, that's the whole thing, is Darvish is it's such an unknown. That return can go really, really well. I mean, you look at a guy like Jose Fernandez, you know, sometimes it goes really well, but I really don't know. I don't have him in any leagues. I didn't take that flyer in any of my leagues. I think the fundamental point, if you have him, you're starting him right away. But, you know, I don't know that I am looking to sell if I have him. I don't know if I'm looking to buy if I don't have him, because I just find his value to be really hard to pin down right now.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. I think I just use him for the strikeouts and hope, and I'll see how the ratios are. I'm not expecting a low whip. I mean, he didn't consistently deliver that before. And sometimes guys, when they first come back from Tommy John, have a little trouble with their control. So I'm not expecting that, but I think the ERA will be fine. Texas is a pretty good team. Like, he should get some offensive support. So, yeah, I feel a little optimistic if I say top 12 starter, because there are some really good starters out there. But if he's not an ace the rest of the season, I feel like he's a number two. Although we also saw, like you mentioned Fernandez, we saw both the good and the bad of guys who come back from Tommy John with Fernandez. We saw the good in how well he pitched. We saw the bad in that he needed additional DL time later in the season. I'm not saying that'll happen with Darvish, but he is riskier than, say, someone like David Price the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Are you just dropping Lucas Duda at this point, given how long and how unclear it is what they're dealing with?
Yeah, if I have DL space, I would probably keep him. I have him in a 15-team league. I'm going to keep him. I did find, like, what Terry Collins said about him wasn't specific at all, where he was just like, oh, it's going to be a while. I felt like that was what we were getting, and I was like, I don't know if I'm dropping him on a manager's quote of it's going to be a while. I mean, maybe he's back by the All-Star break, and he could have a nice second half. I mean, I'm going to wait, I guess, in some leagues, I'm going to wait and see what happens in the next few weeks and what kind of prognosis we get. I just feel like, unless I missed it, I feel like we didn't get anything really specific saying that this guy's going to miss 2 or 3 months yet, right?
No, I think that's a fair point. I just, you know, when I, as a general rule, people tend to be optimists, and the Mets certainly seem to be optimistic. And when the Mets aren't saying, oh, yeah, we feel good about this, that makes me really worried.
Yeah, I wondered when the Mets were first talking about him if they were trying to kind of put some perspective to their fans, saying, like, okay, he's going on the DL, and, folks, don't expect to see him back in 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, don't start asking us in a week,
yeah,
you know, where he's at. Just leave us alone on Duda for a while. He's not going to be back for a while. We'll let you know when we let you know. And we see, like, and then I didn't want to get carried away with Duda because we see with things like Harvey, and I've heard other people mention this recently, and I agree with this, if Harvey pitched for the Oakland A's, there might not be quite as much hysteria around the fact that he struggled a little bit this season. Well, he has struggled a lot this season, and how good he was going into this season. Like, it swings both ways when you pitch for a New York or a Boston.
Absolutely. Sonny Gray, where are you at with him? He, you know, we talked about him a bit. It might not be surprising that he was dealing with something, though it seems like he hasn't been dealing with it for a while. But how do you look at Gray? The hope is that this is not a long-term thing, but it's a little worrisome with the location.
Yeah, I'm a little optimistic. At least now we have a reason. You know,
yeah.
So now I'm a little more optimistic on Gray than I am, say, on Dallas Keuchel. And I could be maybe as optimistic on Gray as I am on Harvey. Not to say that Gray's ceiling is as high as Harvey, but at least we have a reason now with Gray. And we have a break, and maybe he can come back and be what he was last season, you know, after that break. I wouldn't rule out buying low on Gray, like, in a league. I wouldn't mind, you know, especially if I had enough pitching depth that I could go without him, kind of feeling out his owner and saying, hey, what if I give you someone who's not as good as Gray, you know, from a ceiling perspective, but could help you a little bit right now.
Yep. We move to the two start pitchers, and there are a lot of interesting names on here. I'll run just the names first because there are a bunch. De La Rosa, Tomlin, G. Nicolino, Guerra, Nova, Hellickson, Carnes, Andrees, and Roark. And for the first time in a few weeks, there are some guys on here I really like. I'm curious what you think. The guys that come to my mind immediately, Roark, although those are at Philly, at Cincinnati, those are not friendly ballparks. Those are not good offenses, and he's been quite good. You know, the flip side of that, Hellickson, the Nats are not a murderer's row offense, and the Brewers are not good. So those are two guys, and he's been pitching very well. Those are two guys. I'm sure Tomlin is high on your list. Who do you like from that list?
Yeah, Tomlin is high on my list. I like Carnes. I mean, the at Texas is a little scary, but that should be a competitive series. Like, the Mariners are a good team, and he's got the home to San Diego that I really, really like. I totally agree with you on Roark. I'm done doubting Roark. I mean,
yep.
I feel like he doesn't get enough credit from fantasy owners. This is a guy who's pitched plenty of major league innings and has solid ratios and is on a really good team. Like, I think you just go ahead, and I know the strikeout rate's not really high, but I think you just go ahead and use him for most of his starts now. De La Rosa's a little interesting. I'm not a big De La Rosa guy, and the at Cubs is scary. That being said,
yeah,
he's pitched better this year than, you know, than a lot of people expected, and I feel like maybe it's time for me to take a new look at him. This next week is definitely a week where fantasy owners want to look for two-star pitchers because there's a lot of teams with seven games next week. So if you don't get a few two-star pitchers in your lineup, you're probably going to be left behind a lot of your competition in your league as far as strikeouts and wins go. This is a week to definitely, like, you know, really look through the waiver wire. I could have put 10 more starters on our list. I just knew there's only so many we can talk about. There's so many this week.
The matchups are pretty brutal for Nova at Toronto and at Baltimore, so this is less about this week and more just about the pitcher, and then we'll close. But Nova's kind of intriguing to me. He's a guy who's been really rough at times. He's also been a pretty good major league starter at times. Once he gets past a week that includes two really tough places to pitch, do you like Nova sort of broadly?
Yeah, maybe. I've always been a bit of a Nova apologist, and but I am starting to wear out. Last season, he kind of tested my patience a little bit too much, so now I've backed off that a little bit. Because I don't know, over the years, we all have those individual experiences with players, and he's someone who I feel like has just kind of teased me with a few good starts, and then I get in on him, and then he's not so good and everything. But my mind's not closed to him, and I agree with you. I wouldn't use him in most leagues next week. I'd rather just use Hellickson or something like that. But I would, if he can get through next week with a couple quality starts, then I'm interested again.
Right. And that was kind of what I was getting at. All right. That's Fantasy 411. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke.
Yeah, that was a jam-packed week. That was a good one.